ongoing animal abuse controversy at Fair Oaks Farms, the unemployment insurance trust fund needs more money, that plus Indiana's state spending growth leads much of the nation, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending June 14th, 2019.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Built on a 100-plus year foundation of legal service, Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients stay ahead of a changing world. Working to develop an understanding of each client's needs to help build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, a new video showing animal abuse at Fair Oaks Farms was released while an arrest was made in the ongoing investigation into the alleged issues at the Indiana agricultural operation. Now, we would like to give you a warning. The images you're about to see may disturb you. The Miami-based activist group Animal Recovery Mission announced a new undercover video this week showing animal abuse at a Fair Oaks Farms location. It's the second video released by the group in recent weeks. The videos show animal abuse and neglect at two different Fair Oaks locations captured by undercover workers. Charges were announced by the Newton County Sheriff's Office against three workers in the video. Coca-Cola brand Fairlife, which uses Fair Oaks as a supplier, is conducting its own investigation into the incidents, and Kroger suspended its relationship with the Indiana-based company. Meanwhile, State Senator Travis Holdman says he thought the undercover videos were politically driven. Holdman was the author several years ago of controversial legislation that would have criminalized unauthorized recording of agricultural operations, like the videos that uncovered the abuse. Just how serious is the Fair Oaks scandal? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, Kroger and Fairlife were quick to act. Were they a little too quick to act?
No, I think they've reacted exactly the way they should have. I mean, they've fired the employees that were featured in the videos, or committing those acts in the videos. And then not only the facilities themselves, Fair Oaks and their parent companies are now kind of systemically going through their entire supply chain to see if are these individuals doing this, or is this some systemic problem we've got throughout Fair Oaks or throughout anywhere else. So I think they handled it responsibly. I think how big of a deal is it? I mean, that's a two-pronged question, really. I mean, what's the short-term kind of political problem? The founder of Fair Oaks is a very well-respected person, certainly well-known and well-connected in Republican politics,
big
both
Republican
in Indiana
donor,
and at the national level, and rightly so. I don't know that anyone that watched this video that didn't already support the activist organization that kind of infiltrated this facility and made these videos. I don't know that you're winning any hearts and minds there. Certainly, it's shocking. Clearly, the group that videotaped this, the goal was shock and awe and a media attack. It was not, if they were going for the high percentage prosecution strategy or criminal act strategy to force systemic change in the industry or at this facility, this isn't the way you do it, because now you've got law enforcement prosecutors dealing with this kind of national media campaign going, we don't know what to do with this, you know, at this point.
If you're Fair Oaks, what do you have to do next to...
You've got to take, as Mike said, you've got to not only fire the employees, but you have to take steps to show everybody that there's systemic change. Because it looks like this was spread over perhaps more than the people that were fired, certainly for a longer period of time. They weren't isolated instances. So they need to take steps to restore faith in their product. And I think they're doing that by acting quickly. I saw that lawsuit that was filed today. I think that's ridiculous.
The milk drinker?
Yeah.
On behalf of milk drinkers
is,
all over the world.
Can you say that somehow the milk is different or something? Yeah. That's ridiculous.
He was bamboozled.
And I think the group went a little bit too far by saying that this occurs in every operation, too. I mean, they may say that this raises questions and perhaps we ought to look at other operations, but to accuse groups or farms that they haven't ever even looked at of doing the exact same thing.
It's basically a militia who make the same kind of accusations. So the guy who runs this organization drives like a tank and carries a gun. I mean, the guy's like, it's like a more of a militia than it is like this. Like,
so he's a Republican activist? Is that what you're
saying?
Sounds
like it.
Yeah, it does.
I want to talk about Travis Holdman.
I know when I see it.
I want to talk about Travis Holdman. He was obviously asked for comment around this because he had the ag gag bill from a few years ago, and he certainly wasn't. It didn't sound opposed to bringing that issue up again.
I mean, it came up a couple years in a row, actually, and I think they rewrote that 20 ways to Sunday, trying to find a constitutional way to protect farms from this exact thing. But I don't see it being very popular, though, because look what we found. And I think Fair Oaks has done everything they can do to respond quickly to this and well. But, you know, those images are shocking. And so if you say that none of that could ever happen, I think that's a problem. I will say, I know nothing about this group, by the way, but I hope that this is it, though. Like, this, like, piecemealing the stuff out every couple days with some more videos. I mean, that the only purpose of that is to shut them down, and that would have a huge economic, you know, impact on Indiana. If your purpose is to clean it up,
They've done that.
Yeah.
If AgGag wasn't super popular back then, is it going to be any more popular now?
No, I would. If I were advising, giving political advice to Travis Holdman or anyone else who had harbored interest in this bill in the past, I would say don't go near it now. Because if there's one thing that gets people unified across the partisan divide, even in this polarized climate in which we live now, it's the notion of animal cruelty and those that are defenseless. So I think the politics of it would be quite bad. You know, as far as that, the suggestion by some supporters of that legislation back in 2013 or whenever is that only certain people, only on one side of the political persuasion, use these tactics. Let's keep in mind that ask anybody from Planned Parenthood or any of the abortion clinics or remember the Acorn episode with people who were brought in to gain signatures for access to election petitions?
Right.
I think this is a pretty equal opportunity on both sides, and of course it's politically driven. Most things are, but if in the end the goal here,
it's not driven in the sense of Democrat or Republican politics.
No, it's more it's more ideal, more philosophically driven.
Clearly connected to President Trump, and clearly connected to the governor. So I mean, if there is some political motivation there, then they've certainly checked a couple big boxes there. Now, as far as the legislation, I think the goal of the legislation wasn't to stifle this, but it was, and we may discover this is the case here, that you can't go videotape one or two employees, and now you've condemned the largest dairy operation in the country, or put them out of business, or driven away business, or driven them into the ground.
You're more sympathetic to the legislation than I think.
That was part of the motivation for the legislation. It wasn't to just completely stifle this.
But it would have had that effect.
I agree, which is why they rewrote it 20 times, trying to figure out where the right place to land was.
And the answer is the right place to land isn't.
And it's not coming back. And it's not, it may come back, but it won't pass. So end of the discussion, I guess.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we post an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should Indiana criminalize unauthorized recording of agricultural operations, like the videos that uncovered animal abuse at Fair Oaks Farms? A yes or B no. Last week's question, would Democratic Senator Eddie Melton have a chance to beat Governor Eric Holcomb? Only 17% of you say yes, 54% say no, and 29% say it's a little too soon to tell. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Indiana's Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund needs more money, and state leaders are debating when to get business owners to pay up. A report from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette's Nikki Kelly says Governor Holcomb's administration late in the 2019 session sought a 17% tax increase in what employers pay into the Unemployment Insurance Fund. That's because a federal report shows Indiana doesn't have enough in the fund to cover potential future economic downturns. The feds say the state needs $1.8 billion in the bank, while some Hoosier leaders think it should be closer to $1 billion, which the state is on target to meet next year. The debate is when to boost the figures. Doing so now would be easier, state officials argue, than during a recession when the state would need the money most. But business leaders balk at the price tag and say more study is needed. Oh, to search, And Eleni, how much longer can the state afford to wait before making a decision?
I don't think very much longer. Now, of course, the governor's getting pushback from the chamber and also from right-wing Republican conservative sources saying he's raising taxes for the second time in his administration. But, you know, he is governor, and he has to do the responsible thing, and that fund has to be there in the event of a downturn under the current administration, and we need to be prepared for that, because otherwise we'll do what we had to do the last time, and that is borrow money from the federal government and pay them interest on that. So I think it's the responsible thing to do, and they can't wait much longer to do it.
Yeah, we only finished paying off that loan a couple years ago or so, but is this just high tax Holcomb all over again?
So the plan, right, we did exactly what some are saying now, put it off, which is what we did for years.
Right.
And then in 2008, we had the downturn, and then we couldn't just borrow cheap money from the federal government. We had to borrow with interest.
And to be
fair,
Indiana was far from the only state who had to borrow money from the federal government in the downturn.
But we had a 8 or 10 year plan to repay that loan and put a reserve where it almost is today, or where it will be by the end of next year. And then the feds came in and doubled the criteria, so now we're halfway there, right? Which we didn't anticipate when we laid out the plan to begin with. But, you know, I don't think in reading public comments and having discussions with, you know, the IMA or the chamber, kind of the pro-business groups, I don't think anyone's saying absolutely not, we shouldn't put more money there. I think what they're saying is, like Dan Leonard said in your article, Representative Dan Leonard said, we could put $5 billion in there and then we're fine, but what we got to find is, where's the line, how much money do we sideline in order to make sure that we're solvent? Versus that we pull out of the economy and pull out of these companies.
Well, you're never worried about that with the surplus. You always want to put more in there. What's the difference?
I think we've spent money out of the surplus this year.
Oh, yeah, well.
For your priorities, no less. Mm.
There is debate over exactly how much money should be in this fund. There is legitimate debate over how much money should be in this fund. But for the folks who just don't want to have to pay up right now, is that just let's talk about that so we don't have to talk about actually doing it?
Maybe. And part of this that enables that discussion or that stalling to take place among those who are stalling, and I'm not saying the governor's administration is.
No, clearly.
Well, they're clearly not.
Yeah, right.
They're the ones pushing for this to happen.
But there may be some others there. But keep in mind that there is a backstop here, as there was in 2008 for Indiana and other states, when the federal government is not going to let poorhouses and throw people in there and feed them at soup kitchens. I mean,
well, that depends on which administration.
Well, that might be a platform, a plank in somebody's platform. But the fact of the matter is, there is a backstop here. So I'm sure the thinking is, in some camps, we have a court of last resort here. We will just rely on the federal government. And these are some of the same people, keep in mind, as I recall the debate in 2008 and the years that followed, that said, let's not be too quick to pay back the federal government and raise taxes right away, because maybe they'll forgive the loan and the debt. And it was many of the same people who were most critical of federal assistance to states. So this is one of those issues that shows some of the hypocrisy of when is your federal government an enemy?
But there was discussion
until you need
them,
I guess.
The federal government may do that because so many states rely on it.
Right.
But there's also the question here of, while there's debate over how much money should be in the fund, some of this is the feds have some strings attached to putting however much they want in the fund, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a whole lot. They've got a little carrot, basically. If we are at their level of solvency that they want, if we have to borrow, then we can borrow interest-free. We're not there. So if we have to borrow, we're going to have to pay back. And that's the end result here is businesses are going to pay. That's who pays into this fund. They're either going to pay now, they're going to pay later with a surcharge and maybe a reduction in their federal unemployment tax credit. So I do think the question of $1.8 billion is a fair discussion to have. I mean, $1.8 billion is what we have in our surplus for the entire state government as a backdrop. And this would be $1.8 billion. That's the most we've ever paid out in 1 year. They want us to have
and,
in
and
there.
I mean, the next downturn, it's coming. That's just how these things go. It probably won't be as bad as the Great Recession was.
Well, they also made some changes back then on eligibility and that. So the hit probably won't be as deep.
Right. Now, from a political standpoint, the people that say this is just another high-tax Holcomb deal, right, it's not fiscally conservative to say. You're not a fiscal conservative if you say on the gas tax, I don't want the gas tax to go up. It might be fiscally conservative to say, I don't want any more roads, or I don't want the roads we have to be improved. But once you've decided you want the government to have some asset or there needs to be an unemployment backdrop, to say, well, we're just not going to fund it fully. I'd rather have an insolvent fund than have any tax result. That's not fiscally conservative.
You're looking for consistency. It's
and those
not
who advocate.
All right, moving on. Indiana's financial condition, speaking of Indiana's financial condition, is better than many other states in the decades since the recession. That's from a new Pew study. Indiana is in the top half of the country for state revenue spending growth when adjusted for inflation since the recession. It's about 6% higher than it was at the downturn, better than the national average and three of its four neighboring states. The Hoosier State is spending roughly the same on higher education, more on local government support, and more on infrastructure. One major area where Indiana has fallen behind, though, is K-12 spending. Per-student funding in Indiana is about 6% less when adjusted for inflation than before the recession. That's worse than the national average.
Nikki Kelly, despite the majority of good news in this study, and it mostly is good news, how much does that K-12 number stand out in particular right now?
Oh, it's a bad one. And it's coming on the heels of the budget debate and teacher pay and everyone not being happy. It's definitely bad timing. I do want to note that that data is through 2016. So it really doesn't count the last budget or the new budget that we passed. So that is a lot of spending that we've put in the last, 2 years and 2 years to come that was not counted in their
analysis. But so did every other state.
Yeah, but it's still, but even not compared to other states, we were behind through 2016, but we have made more investments in 2017, particularly in the 2019 budget. So we're probably closer to catching up than we were in that study, but does it still not look great?
Oh, wait, sure, it does not look great. When that's the one thing that's just glaring, here are all the markers and the neon light shining on that one thing. It was such a hot topic in the last session of the General Assembly. Having said that, the spin to counter it is the one that you just heard. I'm not saying that Nikki's offering spin, but it is accurate. If you look at the last few years where there has been this heightened investment, historic was the term, in fact, that was employed, as it always is, by whatever caucus is in the majority when a budget is passed. You could say, but for that historic increase, where would we be? And you could say we'd be much...
You know where we are. We're back to where we were in 2008, okay, adjusted for inflation. And we're 11 years later.
But it's just arguing different. Even if
these numbers are updated for the last couple of budgets, it's probably roughly in line with where spending was in 2008 when adjusted for inflation. Is that good enough?
I don't know that. I think we'll find. I don't know what other 49 other states did. I don't know if they increased K-12 spending as much as we have in the last two budget
cycles.
But
even not comparing to other states, even just compared to our own spending.
Right.
I'd like to zoom out and look at all the good news in this report. And really, the budget predictability that we have in Indiana, our ability to absorb ups and downs in month-to-month revenue or quarterly revenue or annual revenue, unlike other states, because we have such a healthy fiscal picture overall, when the economy does tank, you've got other states that are having to either deficit spend, which is what most of them do, dig into teacher pensions, borrow against that, and do other things that we don't have to do anymore. And so is it the panacea where everybody gets all the money that they want in the world? Of course not, and it's never going to be. But we have prioritized in the last two budget cycles K-12 spending first and foremost.
If you look at this report,
to higher ed and other things, other people.
If you
want to
compare with other states, though, I'd argue you need a more nuanced study. And I know this one's not designed to do that because this just looks at overall K-12 spending.
Yeah.
But Indiana, of course, has been a league leader. I'm talking about the use of public funds to follow students into parochial schools or other private schools. I don't think if you look across the country, the spending by other states is anything close to what Indiana has done. So if you looked at that, you actually could see egregious
because that's
drop.
93%.
But that's not what this study is doing. But that's the more potent political issue.
93% of the students are in traditional public schools.
See, why didn't you think of this before I said this?
They're not getting the fair share of this. And we know that because of teacher pay. And we were promised when the state took this over under Mitch Daniels that they were going to fully fund education. We're not to where we were in 2008. And isn't that half the budget? Isn't K-12 half the budget? And they're dropping the ball more than half. They're dropping the ball on funding education so that our children get the kind of start in life they need.
Well, if we would just cut the corporate tax rate, then we could pay for all this.
We could do that.
I was worried you weren't going to say it.
So thank you.
I appreciate
that. No, just stop cutting it every year.
So leave it higher.
All right, a vote is expected soon on a resolution led in part by Indiana Senator Todd Young to block the U.S.'s new sales of arms to Saudi Arabia.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo last month declared an emergency in order to move forward on Saudi arms sales without congressional approval. And Senate Democrats have reportedly secured a few Republican votes, including Todd Young's, to approve resolutions to halt those sales. Those actions could come next week, setting up a veto showdown with the White House. In a statement, Young says the ongoing humanitarian crisis and complicated security environment in Yemen demand more oversight of any deal with Saudi Arabia. Young says the Trump administration has, quote, effectively given a blank check to the Saudis, turning a blind eye to the brutal murder of Jamal Khashoggi and allowing their ballistic missile program to expand.
John Shanes, we talked last week on the show about whether it seems that Republicans are slightly more willing to stand up to the president than they have been before. Is this more evidence of that?
Well, I think some Republicans maybe are feeling emboldened in a way they didn't before, but I don't think that's the case with Todd Young. Simply history is our guide here. If you look back 1 year, 2 years, people were talking in 2017 about how he was a thorn in the president's side on the subject of Yemen, the civil war in Yemen.
Saudi Arabia's role,
which also is a U.S. role. Thousands of people have died in that fighting. Even greater numbers have died in through starvation. It is a significant humanitarian crisis, and that is one that he has been targeting and saying, hey, wake up, world, and pay attention since day one. So I don't think, while some Republicans, I'm sure, are saying, hey, maybe I'm reading the polls, maybe we can be a little bit, not so willing to kowtow to the president. But I don't think, in this case, that's apples to apples.
Anytime you talk about Republicans standing up to a president of their own party, particularly this president, who is seemingly so popular with Republican voters, you talk about political ramifications for them. With this issue, particularly because, as John just pointed out, this has been Todd Young's thing for a while now.
Yeah, I also don't think it's an issue that sort of the average American understands the details of, our relationship with Saudi Arabia and things like that. So I don't think this could have any sort of fallout. And to be honest, it's a little bit of a symbolic vote, because clearly
the White House,
they're not going to be able to override a veto.
Right. Yeah, in that sense, it's another way for Todd Young to assert his opinion on this.
Right.
Without
he's right on the issue. I mean, that country is a disgrace internationally. They kill people who speak out against them. They have women treated as if it's the 1600s. They do all manner of things that we are opposed to as a country. And yet, I don't know whether the president wants to build a hotel there or what the deal is, but he's embraced that group, and he shouldn't. And Todd Young is right on this issue.
Is this the sort of thing that the average, I mean, to Nikki's point, I agree. I don't think the average voter maybe understands the nuances of this particular issue. But does the president look great for saying, no, I really want to sell guns to Saudi Arabia?
He just asked a binary question. Yes or no, should we sell arms to Saudi Arabia?
Yeah.
I think, you're overwhelming to get a no, especially among Republicans. But I think John's analysis is the right one here at home for Todd Young, who has been a leader, particularly on this issue. I don't think it's just symbolic. I think you're seeing a gradual, especially on this issue, because it's come up for a vote a few times over the last several years. You're seeing more and more, especially Republicans, get on board being opposed and being in Todd Young's corner.
And this is something with Todd Young that, I mean, the talk when he first got elected to the Senate was, even from like folks in his camp, was he looked to the Richard Lugar role as something he wanted to aspire to.
And I think
good indication that that's what he's doing, as opposed to being a trumpet like Senator Braun is, who just says whatever it is that Donald Trump wants, I'm for 100%.
Keep in mind, though, it's not just the geopolitics. I agree that may be lost on a lot of Hoosiers. But one thing, portion of his stance can be spun in a way, I think, that appeals to Hoosiers and conservatives, and that is the encroachment of executive power, in this case, versus the role of Congress in the checks and balances.
Oversight.
Because these sales were basically done on an emergency basis that circumvented congressional oversight.
And that creeping power has been part of the talking points of the conservative wing of the party for a long time. All right. Well, finally, the U.S. women won their World Cup opener against Thailand this week by a 13-0 final. And that has prompted a debate about fair play, respect, and sportswomanship. I'm actually interested in your opinions on this. Ann Delaney, were the Americans disrespecting their Thai opponents?
I don't think so. I think maybe they could have toned down the celebration a little. But the number of goals matter. And you know, and what they're showing the Thais is that they need to invest in women's sports a little bit more like the Americans do. I don't fault them at all for running it up. I do think that they probably should have celebrated it a little bit less as they got up to double digits.
Yeah, I mean, score all you want, but maybe act like you've been there before.
Yeah.
They went and hugged the goalkeeper.
They did hug the goalkeeper. The issue has been brought up. Are they setting a good example? Do you think that's in play?
Well,
here?
I mean, that was brought up by the Canadians who lost to us. Okay?
Well, that's true.
And lost to us by the two players they're complaining about.
If the men scored 13 goals, one
Nobody
would be shocked.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/iwir. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, built on a 100-plus-year foundation of legal service. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients stay ahead of a changing world, working to develop an understanding of each client's needs to help build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.